And welcome back to another Game Informer podcast extra. I'm your host, Ben Reeves, and Game Informer is the place where we inform you about game consoles. I've assembled an elite team of GI editors who've messed around with both the Xbox Series systems and the PlayStation 5. We're here to tell you all about them. Reviews are dropping, and we want to know all about them. So, Jeff Quirk?
Yes, sir.
How's it going?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
You've played around with both consoles, I believe, right?
It's true. Yeah, I don't want to share my thoughts now because there's a bunch of other guys you got to introduce.
Yeah. Matthew Miller, how's it going?
Going great.
You did the review for the PlayStation 5, just giving everybody a lay of the land. We have Brian Shea.
Hey.
Who did the review for the Xbox. Yep. And then, of course, it wouldn't be complete if we didn't have Alex.
One of the Alexes, yeah.
One of the Alex Stadnick, and Andrew Reiner.
Yes, I did the review of Spider-Man.
That's right, which we will also be talking about here, which is a good segue. So let's just dive right in. Let's talk about the new consoles. We got our hands on the Xbox first, so maybe that makes sense to kind of start with that. Brian, what did you think when you first opened that box and saw the new console?
The Xbox Series X came in first. So I've spent multiple weeks with both Series X and the Series S, which is the discless version. And the Series X is pretty massive. It's like a foot tall and 6 inches wide, 6 inches deep. So it looks more like a PC tower than a traditional gaming console. But yeah, I mean,
have you noticed that it looks kind of like a fridge?
Nobody's pointed that out on social media, so I don't think that I've come to that conclusion on my own.
Yeah, well, you heard it here first. But you liked it. You liked the system when you got it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's very fast. Like, once you plug it in and start it up, it's super fast. Like, I'm used to my Xbox One X, which, you know, is, as of this recording and as of when you might be listening to this podcast, is the most powerful console on the market prior to these systems coming out. And the Xbox Series X just puts it to shame. Like, it's an instant startup. My Xbox One X takes forever to get rolling with all the games that I have installed on it. But yeah, the Series X, like, you know, as soon as you turn it on, it asks you, like, all right, what profile do you want to log into? And then you're immediately at the home screen as soon as, like, it establishes that connection with Xbox Live. And it's impressive how fast you can go through the menus, how fast you can load into games. It's so much smoother, even if it doesn't do, like, a dramatic change from the Xbox One experience in terms of, like, the dashboard and even the controller. It feels so much smoother, feels so much better to use even before you even load into the games.
I was going to say, we're talking about the UI real quick. Shay, tell me if you agree with this. It seems like Microsoft is trying to make this as smooth a transition between generations as possible. So it's difficult to, like, distinguish, at least initially, some of the, like, UI differences when you're moving from, like, Xbox One to Series X. Like, things are where you would expect them to be after the last update on last gen. So, like, if you're looking for something, like, shiny and crazy and different, at least from a UI perspective, it's not there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Microsoft is really trying to use the kind of, like, the PC model of, all right, well, when I upgrade my gaming rig, I get a whole new PC tower with all new hardware inside of it. I'm still running Windows 10 on it, so it's not that big of a difference from, like, the UI perspective, but, like, yeah, where you really notice it is under the hood when, you know, you start seeing the performance differences, like the processing power, the SSD, all that stuff just delivers such a better experience.
Do you guys like having the UI change? Because I personally kind of enjoy having a new UI pop up, and I'm like, oh, this is a new system. It's all brand new. It looks and feels different. The PS5, for example, has kind of a new look to it. Is that correct, Miller?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm with you, Ben. I think one of the things that distinguishes the console experience from PC gaming is the idea of, like, hey, a new console comes along and it really changes up. It feels new, right? And I think in a few different regards, while both of these systems are really incredibly powerful systems that offer really fast loads and quick ways to get back into games, one of the ways that the PlayStation 5 distinguishes itself is in offering several things, both on the user experience side with the controller, which we'll talk about a lot later, and a few other ways, something that feel pretty new. The UX for the PlayStation still follows in the legacy of what PlayStation has done before. People may remember the term the cross-media bar, from which I think originally showed up in the PS3 era. PS4 kind of evolved that, and they didn't really call it that anymore, I don't think. And the PlayStation 5 continues that sort of horizontal line of icons that you can enter, but it does feel new. And there's a lot of ways that they have things organized in terms of the PlayStation 5 control center and how you get in and out of applications and games that just feels like it's like a new experience, which I dig.
It's giving me the sensation of like renting a car you're not familiar with. And like the first day or so, there was a lot of like accidentally hitting the windshield wipers and honking the horn and that kind of thing. But I think once I've got the hang of it, like the biggest thing is like hitting the PlayStation button on the controller doesn't bring you out of the game and into like the main menu. It just brings up a little overlay at the bottom that lets you kind of engage with the same stuff. It's easier to get back to the game too. So that kind of threw me for a loop.
First day with PlayStation 5, I was like, how do I turn this off? It's like, I'm doing what I used to do and it's not doing the same thing. Whereas Series X, it's like a well-worn glove, right? Like you turn it on and there is that kind of moment of disappointment of like, what did I just buy? You guys are totally right with the PC analogy and, or, you know, iPhone. It's like, this is exactly the same thing. But to Shay's point, like once you really start going through those menus, you're cruising at a different speed. And, you know, just resuming games at a quicker pace, that stuff's all very impressive. And that's where the real next gen kind of feel comes in. Sony kind of establishes that the second you turn it on, it looks shiny and new.
What'd you guys think about the design of the system and how it looks? It's definitely big. Like, it's just massive.
It's blotting out the sun.
Yeah.
Bigger, it's like the opening console of Star Wars.
Yeah.
There comes the Star Destroyer. It's the biggest console ever made, I think something like 15 inches tall. One of the things that I talk about in our dedicated hardware review is that I think there was a conscious decision on the part of the designers to say, like, let's just embrace this. With something that's a really big piece of hardware, I think most people, both in games and in other forms of tech design, the most common approach is to try to minimize, right? You try to kind of pull things down, use shapes and colors and things like that don't call attention to how big the device is. That is not what Sony opted for here. They went the other direction. There are bright lights. I turned off the lights at night at one point just to see, and it illuminated the floor, right? I mean, the light is enough so that you can see where you're going and walk around in your room. Just from the running lights on this thing.
That's why it blots out the sun. It doesn't need the sunlight.
Exactly.
It is our sun.
It's got these big fins on the side. It's got a stand that whether you're in vertical position or horizontal position, it gives it this kind of cool effect that it's like floating in space. You have to use it, right? It won't sit flat and safely if you don't use it. And so all of those things combine to make this a thing that you really have to look at. It is in my mind a little bit ostentatious. I don't love the exterior design, but it's also a design that seems to say, like, look at me, I'm a badass and I can prove it. It does. I mean, like, for whatever I have to say about the exterior design and how much it's sort of a showy piece, it backs it up by being a very, very powerful machine once you get it going.
I like that it's showy. You know, it has like that, the Frank Lloyd Wright kind of design. It's just like, whoa, that's different. But it kind of works with what Sony's established as a brand. And yeah, I like that it really stands out. And, you know, the only thing, it is gargantuan. And I think people will have problems getting that into some of their entertainment centers, whether it's vertical or horizontal. That's the only knock I would have against it. But you know, if that means, if it needs to be that big for the horsepower that it has, and it's impressive on that end too. I think it's very cool.
Yeah. I think it looks super cool. And I was really excited to show it to my wife for the first time because she doesn't follow games or anything. So it was just like getting someone's raw reactions of something like that. And it was just this transformation from like confusion to disbelief to just like laughing out loud, because it's just, If you're just being like, we've had time to kind of think about it, to process what this thing was going to look like, but just to be, here's this thing, here's this weird object. It is hilarious if you're not ready for it, because it's so stupid and awesome at the same time, in my opinion.
Correct.
So,
Yeah. My only impression.
I love the Frank Lloyd Wright comparison. It's really good because it feels like something that's from another era almost. It feels like it's a 1950s design or something. It's crazy.
My only impression of the PS5 is in a powered off state because I was in the studio with Alex one day recording some videos. And I have to say, I was just completely caught off guard by how huge it was. Like, I had heard legend of how big it was. And I was so focused on just like the sheer mass of the Xbox Series X. I was like, oh man, that's the biggest console I've ever seen. And then when you see the PS5 in person, it just completely dwarfs it, especially from like a height perspective. Like it's crazy how huge the PS5 is.
Yeah. Seeing the PS5 for the first time is like meeting God for the first time. Shay, I think you had problems fitting the Xbox on your stand, right? So are you worried about being able to fit the PS5 on there?
No. So like the thing about the Xbox is, it's like a foot tall or slightly more than a foot tall, I think. It's like width is like the problem, you know, because I have like vertical oriented slots on my entertainment stand that are meant for like a Blu-ray player or a cable box or, you know, a normal video game console. The PS5, I don't think is tall enough to take up the entire thing. I mean, it will take up the entire thing, but it's not tall enough to exceed that. So I'm looking at it right now. I think it will probably be fine. I mean, my Xbox One X and my PS4 Pro are perfectly fine in there. I think that as long as the PS5 isn't super wide, which it's not, it will be just fine.
The takeaway is that I think for people who are going to get one or certainly both of these consoles, some reorganization of your entertainment center is almost definitely going to be required. Much more so than any previous generation of console. There's just a lot of bulk that you're going to have to account for and find a space for.
And like, you're going to need to give them a lot of room for ventilation and stuff. Just, I think that putting the PS5 in your entertainment system will provide entertainment for us later, Shay. But for your sake, I think you might want to just leave it out in the open.
Oh, good.
My house burned down again.
Insurance somehow.
Well, I'd love to talk about performance of both of the consoles. If you're upgrading from a current gen console, the big talking point has been that load times are going to just disappear. Have you guys found that that's the case? Are there still some loads? They're just shorter?
It's magic. It really is. I call it magic. Playing Spider-Man in particular, you cold boot that thing in a matter of seconds. And fast travel is just a flash and restarting after death just as quick. The days of us surfing our phone as our games are loading or might be gone. I'm going to miss that. Maybe we'll have retro designs where they just bake in a minute load times for people that want to use their phones.
Yeah. Just for fun.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, the actual PlayStation 5 games go super fast. There are a couple important caveats that I think people should keep in mind. One is that is very true for new gen games running on the system. I'll let Brian speak in a second to the Xbox, but on PlayStation 5, running PlayStation 4 games on the PlayStation 5, I did find improvement in load times, but it in the games that I was able to test that were patched already to be able to run on PS5, it wasn't like it went from 30-second loads to 1-second loads all of a sudden. That wasn't my experience. Maybe some of them will be that way because we haven't been able to test, you know, a huge array of different PlayStation 4 games, but it sees a reduction, right? So you still have some of those load times on backwards compatible stuff. The other thing, of course, that's going to continue to be a load. I mean, a lot of people play games that are social games or multiplayer games. You're still going to have to do matchmaking and that kind of stuff. That process is still, we think about that as being part of a load screen, but it's really a separate process.
To jump in on that, I played Warzone with the Series X last night, and while the matchmaking still took about as long, getting into the actual map was noticeably quicker. I think the moments that I had where I went, oh, okay, this is like next-gen processing is the Warzone thing. Ori is a small game, but I think it's indicative of the power of it in that, you know, when you would fast travel, it would take some time, you know, to get where you were going from the map, but the map boots up right away, and the fast travel took like seconds, where it usually loads a little bit slower. And then the quick resume feature for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, that actually only took me like seconds compared to like to get back into it and start exactly where I was. And those moments were like, oh, okay, now I get, now I see why this thing is such a beast.
Like Xbox Series X and S, the backwards compatibility stuff definitely gets a benefit from it. Like, I think it cut the load times in half for Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and it knocked off a full minute off Red Dead Redemption 2's load times. And, you know, talking about like the server-based stuff, like I was playing Overwatch with somebody who was on an Xbox One and I was playing on an Xbox Series S, and like pretty much the moment it started loading the map, I was into the map and I was like, all right, I'm gonna head to the point, and they're like, I'm still loading.
You guys who've played with both of the new consoles, do you notice any performance differences between both of the new gen consoles?
It's difficult to really quantify that right now because I haven't played like the same game on both systems, you know what I mean? So like the stuff that I played on PlayStation 5 has been first party stuff, so a little bit of Spider-Man and then Astro's Playroom, which clearly those developers have nice relationships with Sony's engineers and they're able to like squeeze everything they can to get like a really great first impression. Whereas like on Xbox, I played like it, this is what kind of puts it in a weird area too, is because we're playing on like pre-release systems, so developers are still in a like a transitional phase where like for a while Watch Dogs Legion was playable on Xbox Series X and you would get some additional performance improvements like with load times and things like that, but it wasn't like the optimized next gen version of the game, to a point where I think Ubisoft even pulled it for a while temporarily just to be like, this is not representative of what this game is going to be like on Series X, which is a problem that no one is going to encounter now when the systems are out. You know what I mean? It's just kind of this weird gray area we're in. But even still, like playing Yakuza Like a Dragon, the load times on that were like super quick. You didn't even have time really to read the tool, like the tip pop-ups in where a normal loading screen would be. Like there were times where I was just like halfway through the first sentence and it was gone. I'm like, I wish it had slowed down, actually. Like that,
what did that say?
Use items to what?
Need glasses. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I talked to a developer about like how fast the load times are, and they were like, yeah, we can't do like load screen tips anymore. We're going to have to figure out another way to get that to the player.
Yeah, maybe give people manuals for the games.
What an innovative idea, Jeff. Really interesting. I think one of the things that came up that bears discussion, especially in a comparison between the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox, talked about quick resume on the Xbox. Brian, if you wanted to talk a little bit about, I know you did a lot of experimentation with that, and then I can talk a little bit about the PlayStation 5 doesn't do exactly the same thing, but it does something else that's kind of cool.
Sure, I can talk a little bit about quick resume real quick. Basically, you can bounce between games and like it basically suspends their state when you go to another game. So like I was playing Control and, you know, I finished doing something and I wanted to jump over and play something like Assassin's Creed Odyssey or Hitman 2 or something like that. And bouncing between all these different games, it just, when you go to select the game that was in a suspended state, it gives you the splash screen and then a little logo that says quick resume appears in the upper right corner. And then before you know it, you're right back into where you left off with that game. So there's no going through the menus, like the developer splash screens or anything like that. So you don't have to worry about that initial load time. That, I think, is the closest thing to magic that you get with anything in the Xbox era. Like, I know we were talking about magic for, like, the PS5 load times. But, like, being able to suspend, I mean, and, like, in the preview build, I got up to, like, 5 or 6 games could be suspended at once. But with the review build, which is what I've currently working off of, I got up to 9 before I called it quits on like just adding more games to this queue. They were all like big open world games. Like I was doing Red Dead 2, I was doing Final Fantasy 15, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So they were all pretty like graphically intensive, large open world games. And I was bouncing between them with like seconds in between each play session.
It is. I really like that concept for the Xbox. I haven't gotten a chance to play with that yet, and I'm eager to explore it. PlayStation 5 does some things kind of similar to that, but not to the same tier. It has a switcher that lets you, if you've got sort of games that you had been active on that have been suspended, you can switch back to them, but it's not always like directly back into exactly where you are. However, in any given game, you do have these really interesting activity cards that are connected to the game that you're playing. And it does often let you jump directly to that activity, which is really interesting. The game that best shows this off right now is actually the game that comes with the system. The Astro experience in Astro's Playroom, where you can go into your little activity cards for that game and it'll show you like, okay, well, you're 50% through this level, or you're 25% into doing this one thing. And you can immediately jump to those, right? So you could be playing the game and then like jump to a different part of the game. But it also acts as a really cool way to track what you've started on, right? What you're interested in doing in the game.
They're kind of like bookmarks. Is that how you would call them? Like
you can jump back to
an area that you've previously played.
I think that's a good analogy, actually. They're a way to have multiple bookmarks in your game while you're playing it, right? Now, some of this is dependent, as near as I can tell, it's dependent on how the developer sets it up, right? They have choices to set up like what things will register as activities and what things they're going to track your percentage completion of. And so it's going to be a little bit dependent on that. But it is a really cool way to keep track of some of that stuff. And I saw in a few different games, there's another really cool way that the activity cards are used, which is that it lets you dig down deeper into information on that particular activity, especially for solving something or figuring out how to do it. It will sometimes have, again, depending on if the developer is taking the time to do this stuff, it will have a hint section, right? So like, let's say a game is like, collect 3 of these parts to create this new armor. You could go in and it'll show you, sometimes it will have both a text entry that says like, to get the first piece of armor, climb the mountain on the left after you enter the level and follow this path until you get to the top. And the first piece of armor is behind this rock. So you can read that, but it will also have a video. And you can watch the video, you can pop it out to full screen, or you can even sometimes put the video as a picture-in-picture on your screen so that you can literally be playing alongside, like to solve the puzzle or to complete the collection or whatever, as you're watching a developer playthrough of that sequence. So I think it's that's not a thing that everybody's going to use, but it is a way to speak to... offering people the choice for how they engage with their games, which is a big focus for Sony and with PlayStation 5. If somebody gets frustrated with something, like a puzzle in an adventure game or something like that, and they just don't want to keep going on it, it's not fun for them anymore, it offers a way to just let them, you know, I'm going to move past that and get to a thing that's fun again, which I really like.
I think
like.
That's a really cool idea. And it feels like, I mean, especially this day and age, a lot of us just look up a YouTube video or something.
Sure.
Do you feel like that is actually like easier to interact with this system than doing like a video on your phone?
I think so. I mean, I think anything that keeps you from having to depart the experience you're having with the game is a smart way to have it done. Certainly there's always going to be ways that you can go online and find that stuff. But in times that I've had to do that, you know, you always, you find that you're going to YouTube or you're going to wherever it is that you prefer to try to track down that information. You're sifting through ads first and you're having to listen to somebody tell you how much you should subscribe and like their content. Then you're trying to fast forward to the section where they talk about it and you're trying to find where that is. To have a discrete small piece of information that's either written or video that lets you kind of move forward with the game, I thought was really cool. It's not a huge thing, right? There's some people who will never use that functionality who feel very strongly about like, listen, if I feel like it's cheating and if I do that, if I don't solve this thing myself or I don't find it myself, then that's fine. Not everybody feels that way. So I think it's cool.
I know. Sounds like a cool feature. I would love to hear about controllers. If you guys want to talk about controllers for a bit, you guys want to tell me about this PS5 controller?
Yeah,
it's a game changer.
About it?
Everything.
Yeah. Go for it, Reiner. You played with it a bunch with Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know, my preference is still the kind of the PlayStation or the Xbox placement of the analog sticks being kind of uneven, where these are right next to each other again, kind of a legacy feature for PlayStation. They have the analogs right there. And the two big things on here are you have the haptic feedback in the shoulder buttons that can fight against you, can tighten as you're pulling back a bowstring or swinging on a web line in Spider-Man. And then, or those are the adaptive triggers, right? And then you have the haptic feedback that gives you a little bit different rumble sensation. The audio that comes from the PlayStation controller is also better. It just feels like a sturdier unit. The plastic feels better. It feels like a really nicely made controller. And finally, I would say a real competitor for Xbox's controller, which I think has been the best for generations. But now I think Sony's changed the script a little with these new functions. And I think Microsoft's going to need an answer to it as they move forward with Series X.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is the Xbox Series S controller. If you're watching the video of this podcast, and it basically keeps the Xbox controller more or less the same as the Xbox One controller, which, you know, not necessarily an awful thing if you're talking about like how great that controller was in the last generation. But if you're, again, it's like similar to what we were talking about with the operating system. It doesn't give you that wow newness feeling. But there are a few minor tweaks that it does do. Like, it has a multi-directional D-pad, which actually feels very precise on 2D platformers. Like, I was really concerned that, like, this would suck for games like Dead Cells or Sonic Mania or Street Fighter, but I felt it was really accurate and precise, and I was able to do all the stuff I wanted to do with it. It has grip on the backs of the handles, triggers, and bumpers, which feels great. It you really can't underestimate how much it improves, like how it feels in your hand when you have these grips.
Hey, but Brian, those grips are, it's kind of like the sandpapery thing. It's not like a kind of rigid kind of area.
More than anything. But it does feel really good in your hand. And the share button, which is a new addition in the middle of the controller, is, I think, the biggest quality of life improvement on this controller. And basically that allows you to do the share and capture functionality of the Xbox One, where you had to hit the home button and then bring up that separate menu and then press X or Y. Just do that with a single press or a long press. So you do a quick press for a screenshot or a long press for a video, and it automatically records and uploads if you have the settings set to that.
So, you know, this was their chance to rename those dumb buttons, the hamburger and whatever else that other thing is, and they didn't. I still don't know what they're called.
Everybody's always going to call them start and select, even as they try to change them. I mean, I think obviously Brian and I communicated a lot about the main topics we needed to address when we were writing each of these hardware reviews. And then we stepped back from each other and let each other kind of make our own conclusions. But when we came back together after putting together the reviews, I think the themes of iteration for Xbox and innovation for PlayStation really emerged, right? I think and both of those in the best sense of those words, right? Like, the Xbox has moved forward in ways like that controller, where it's like it's small changes but good ones that are going to remain familiar to people who are Xbox devotees, whereas the PlayStation has tried to make, I think, more aggressive changes to the experience, to the controller, and innovate in pursuit of deeper immersion, right? That's been their big quest. And I think to some degree they've been successful. I agree with everything Reiner said about this controller. I mean, it's very hard. I talked to developers who were developing for this controller ahead of when I used it. And they talked to me about the haptic feedback and the adaptive triggers. And I was like, yeah, I've heard this before. Like, it's rumbles. I get it. Your controller rumbles around. That's great. Let's move on. And they kept on coming back to it. Like, no, I mean, this is cool. It's really cool. And I know the people who are listening to this who haven't tried this controller are going to feel exactly the same way. But I'm telling you, it's different. It's not just the little shaky rumble that you've had before. The feeling of like, I've got a character with a gun or a bow and arrow in my game, and I pull that trigger and it feels like there is tension beneath my finger that sort of snaps when the actual trigger pull goes. Or the feeling that, you know, in Astro's Playroom, there's times that there's like little creatures that are inside your controller and you move it back and forth. You can literally feel the creatures like running back and forth inside your controller. It's really cute. It's adorable.
It's like the greatest pleasure you'll ever have.
It's really just the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, sex is great, but you ever held a PS5 controller?
You ever actually had a PS5 controller in your hand? I don't want to oversell it. I think your point is well made, Ben. It's not like it changing everything about gaming or anything, but I do think that it is a controller experience that is different from what you've had before.
Yeah, one thing I'll add, you know, think of it this way, like with the way that trigger is tightening, if you're pulling back a bow and in a game like Tomb Raider, you would see the circle shrinking, you know, it was a visual cue. Now it's feel. You don't need that visual cue. You can focus elsewhere on the screen and just have that feel enhance the gameplay.
Mm. Yeah.
It's quite ingenious.
I think what's interesting about the PS5 controller too is that you mentioned these things in like individual components of it are things that you've experienced before. So like you've seen the count how many ice cubes are inside of the Joy-Con. So I mean, like we've had like precision haptic feedback before. If you played a game like even on the 360 era with a force feedback steering wheel, like in one of the earlier Forza games, you know what it's like to have something that kind of bucks back in your hand like that, or like on PC. But I think this, it just marries all these things that you may or may not be familiar with in a really sophisticated way. I think Reiner points to the load times as being magical. I would say, like, I think the controller really is just like I think people who check out what it feels like they're going to want to pass it to their friends quickly just to share that experience, just so they don't sound like a crazy person, you know?
And then they're going to want to rip it back out of their hands.
Exactly.
Give it back.
I was just going to say quickly, that's why I think you really shouldn't sleep on Astro's Playroom when you pick this thing up day one. Obviously, there's not a ton of games out there, but that is such, it is not only just a great use of that to feel like that magical experience, but also it's a fun game. And I think that combination is just, even if it's just a level or two, please go play that game.
Before we get off the controller, I would also say a couple other important pieces of information here is that there is a built-in mic on this. So even for players, if you've ever had the experience of playing with your friend who doesn't play a lot of multiplayer games and they're like, I don't know if I have a mic, let me dig around. That's gone, right? You can play with the mic that's on the controller. And I tested it in multiple combinations, both with like the two people at either end, both just using the controller mic, one person with a headset, both people with headsets, all that kind of all those combinations work well. If you don't have a headset, the sound from party members from voice chat comes through the controller, which is a little dicey. I mean, it's an argument for like, you probably want to get a headset if you're going to do a lot of social gaming. But the point is that there is an option that is functional that lets you play online with your friends. And there is also a built-in mute button, which I really like. That's
use
just
it.
On the controller.
So yes, nice.
Please use it. Just as a general plea to everyone I've ever played video games with, use your mute button.
I think Sony should. I think they should implement it. If you put in the system that you're like below 13, that it should just automatically be muted. You have to like dig into the system to undo it.
Depending on how high your voice is. Unregistered voice. Interesting thing, maybe worth pointing out, is my understanding is that you can use Xbox One controllers on the Xbox Series with pretty much any game, correct? But
yeah, so that's the thing
about, that's not always the case with the PlayStation.
Yeah, so Xbox is like, in terms of like compatibility, they are absolutely kings there. Like the every game, aside from a handful of Kinect titles that work on Xbox One, work on Xbox Series X, which means that, you know, all the backwards compatible games on Xbox One also work. So if like you want to play Fusion Frenzy from the original Xbox, or you want to play like anything from Xbox 360 backward compatibility, that all works on Xbox Series X, in addition to the entire catalog of Xbox One games, minus a handful of Kinect titles. But the other thing is that the hardware compatibility is incredible. Pretty much any peripheral that you want to use from Xbox One works on Xbox Series X. Like I've used my Xbox Elite Series 2 controller and a wireless Xbox One headset, and also like the Rock Band 4 Legacy adapter that lets you use like old instruments. I've used all of those. They either sync or plug in and work just like they were designed for an Xbox Series X, even though, you know, they were made long before any of Xbox Series X stuff was even a dream. So it's really cool how like it just, it's one of those things where it just works. So that's awesome. You don't have to buy all new controllers. You don't have to, if you don't want to, you don't have to buy a whole new headset. A console's already expensive enough, so that's a huge thing to not have to worry about.
Did you try plugging in a Kinect?
No, I didn't.
Somehow to see if it worked.
I don't have an adapter. Like,
Microsoft's like, what is this? I've never seen this before.
Yeah, there's no port for the Kinect anymore. But you need like a USB adapter, which I did not have.
Fair enough. And then in terms of compatibility on the PlayStation side.
Yeah, I mean, this is one space where I would absolutely give the nod to the Xbox based on what Brian's told me about his experience there. I don't mean to say that PlayStation 5 doesn't do anything in terms of backwards compatibility or compatibility with accessories, but it is a much more complicated equation. For instance, to start with what you had talked about with controllers, you can sync up a DualShock 4 to the PlayStation 5 and use it, but it does not work on PlayStation 5 games. It works on PlayStation 4 backwards compatible games, but not the newer stuff. In terms of software, Sony used the term the vast majority of PS4 titles should work at launch, but already even in the weeks leading up to launch, a big publisher like Ubisoft came out and said, you know, we've got some previous games that just aren't going to work on the PlayStation 5, including some like Assassin's Creed games, some older Assassin's Creed games. And so it's not as complete of a backwards compatibility option as far as software goes.
Did you try plugging a Kinect into the PS5?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to tell you that my PlayStation 5 has blown up now and it doesn't work anymore. So, I mean, there's some of the accessories, a lot of the specialty peripherals do work, like arcade sticks, light sticks, that kind of stuff. The PS5 Move, the VR Aim controller, those work with supported like PSVR games, so that's good. The PlayStation camera from PS4, that works, but you have to go through this process to acquire an adapter. It's free. Sony will send it to you, but you've got to like go and fill out an online form, and then they'll like send you the adapter that you need for it. Headsets are also kind of a weird mixed bag. There's the specialty first-party headset that they have, which is a good headset that among other things enables fully experiencing their new 3D audio engine. Other good headsets that plug in via USB or audio jack also can help with that. But in a weird twist, and I think this might be, you can talk about this a little bit for Xbox as well, Brian, Bluetooth headsets still don't work with PlayStation 5, which was a big disappointment for me.
Yeah, it doesn't work on Xbox either. You can get an adapter that like you can use in USB, like a receiver for Bluetooth, but I mean, at that point, you might as well just buy a Series X or Xbox specific headset.
Well, we started talking about games, so let's just get into it. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts. I mean, this is the reason we're buying these things, right? Is to play games. So as you guys look at the launch lineups, how do you feel about each console's launch lineup? They're fairly similar. Both consoles have the new Assassin's Creed, new Call of Duty, Watch Dogs, but there's a few notable exclusives.
On PlayStation especially.
We already talked about Astro, but I mean, Reiner, you played and reviewed Spider-Man.
Yeah, Marvel's Spider-Man, Miles Morales, to kind of what Jeff Cork said, Insomniac, obviously, you know, a Sony studio, well-versed with that hardware, taking advantage of that SSD, you know, the quick data flow, and it's impressive on there. Like, not only in how fast it is, but just how beautiful it is. And you know, the PlayStation 4 game still looks really good, but there's a noticeable difference, a noticeable jump in quality between the two, especially with the ray tracing. If you're playing it in fidelity mode, 4K, 60 frames a second in performance mode, where you don't get the ray tracing, but it still looks amazing. Like this game is just a beast of a technical marvel, and it's a great game too. You know, that's the starting point. There is it is a nice follow up to 2018 Spider-Man game that featured Peter Parker. This one focuses on kind of his understudy, Miles Morales, another character that was bit by a spider. You know, they just got to fumigate New York, get rid of those spiders. It's more of a coming of age story, whereas Peter's was, you saw him 7 years into his career. So he's not as refined, but as the game goes on, he develops new powers that makes him very distinct. Venom abilities, which is this bioelectrical charge. He can, adapt to different attacks and jumps and movements. And that really makes him feel powerful in a different way. And then also he can turn invisible for short periods of time and camouflage himself, which if you think about how stealth is performed in these games, that gives you a distinct advantage and really opens it up to different strategies where in the past, if Peter got spotted in the first game, combat from that point on to the end would just be melee, right? Like there's no chance of getting away. They're going to be shooting at you. They're going to be hunting you. This one, Miles can turn invisible, reset the encounter. The enemies will lose track of you. They'll go back onto their patrol path and you can try stealth again. So right there, it's a big difference maker. Those two big abilities of Miles make him very distinct as a hero, and it's a ton of fun to play. The story goes places. It doesn't have the villain star power of the last game. You had the complete Sinister Six and more in the last one. This one really just kind of focuses on a few villains. It's very personal for Miles. I loved the musical montages, the slow moments that they do. Insomniac is really kind of flexing their muscle, both as storytellers and also in just how big those set piece moments can get at times. You saw the bridge sequence during one of PlayStation's live streams where the bridge is falling apart and you see the physics and it's just amazing. That goes on even further and it's bonkers. And then just out of the gates, there's this rhino scene that's just crazy, like over the top, brilliantly shot and, you know, cinematic. And it really sets the stage for a really fun adventure.
Yeah, I've been playing it a little bit as well. I've been playing on the PS4, just to be clear. And so I'm playing with loads and hair doesn't look as good. And, you know, there's a few downgrades, but it's still a fun game. Like as the core of the game, the action is still really fun. The fight scenes in particular are just insane, over the top, like very comic booky in a really good, fun way. So if you enjoyed Insomniac Spider-Man, you're totally gonna love this game as well. So definitely.
Yeah, and it's a lot like the Marvel Cinematic Universe and how the story continues forward, right? It focuses on a different hero, but Peter's story also continues. And by the end of this game, they give you a big tease for what's next. And oh man, I cannot wait for that game, because it's such a great setup. Again, you know, it's hitting a lot of the same beats, but yeah, they tease something else that's different. And it's about half the length of Peter's journey. You know, you're 7, 8, 9 hours, wherever, you know, however complete you want to be in it, whether you're getting the gold medals and all that obviously adds time. But yeah, it's a good length. It feels about right for the story they tell. And yeah, I loved it. I gave it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, it's awesome. Reviews on the site if you want to check that out. And then, I mean, we talked about Astro. There's the PlayStation also has Demon Souls and The Pathless, which hopefully we'll be able to talk about them soon. But those are also some notable games like that I think people are excited about. And then on the other side, the Xbox has, I feel like the only one that people really care about much is Yakuza. Just looking at these two launch lineups, do you guys feel good about this launch generation, or do you feel like there's enough here? Because a lot of these games can be played on last gen consoles as well. So is there enough of a reason to buy a new console?
I mean, the further out you go, the more the reasons start to build up, right? Like if you look at big notable games that are on the horizon beyond the launch window, both consoles, you know, on Xbox, you have things like Halo and Fable that have been announced. On the PlayStation, you've got things like Final Fantasy 16 and Horizon and even the untitled God of War sequel. You know, the reasons to own one of these consoles for the games library grow as you wait longer. And you also, I mean, another important thing is that both consoles have different attempts to offer subscription services that are pretty cool right now. Brian, I think, has talked a lot about in his writing about the Xbox, about how strong of an offering Xbox Games Pass is. I agree with that. I think it's awesome. Sony's kind of trying to play catch up there with a few different subscription services that they offer, both PlayStation Now, PS Now, and PlayStation Plus, which now has on PS5 the PlayStation Plus Collection, are ways to have access to some games effectively without additional charge beyond the subscription. But I do think it's important for us to address the idea that, like, with the exception of a very small number of games like Demon's Souls, which is a PlayStation 5 exclusive game, if you don't care about performance or load times or having things look great on your 4K TV, I don't know if now is the time to upgrade, for you to drive yourself crazy trying to track down a way to pre-order or track one of these things down, because that's really what it's offering. It's offering a performance boost not a lot of new games quite yet. There a lot of these games are things that you can play on the consoles you already have. And so you have to ask yourself the question of, like, especially in a year like 2020, which, you know, we don't need to get into, but it's obviously a turbulent time for a lot of people, especially financially. $500 or $1,000 plus all the accessories you might want to buy and the new games and all that kind of stuff. That is a lot of money that you got to think about whether it's worth it to you for what might just be a couple of games that you could instead play on the systems that you already have. But if you want the best experience, there is no doubt that either the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox Series X is going to offer you a really phenomenal and fast gaming experience.
That's well said, Miller. And I'll just add, speed is a difference maker here. It is a quality of life upgrade that is huge. Going back to PS4 or Xbox One, it's crazy how much longer those load times are. You know, once you actually see what happens on these new consoles, that's a big difference maker for me. It's like buying an iPhone. It kind of feels like that. You get the better resolution, the better camera. It's still an iPhone at its core. You know, these aren't significant leaps over what we had before in terms of just how they function, but that speed, the processing speed is impressive. And for me, there's no going back. Like I love these things.
For sure. And I think when we look at launch lineup too, I compare it to last gen. And for me, I was playing Call of Duty Ghosts and NBA at launch for like ever. So to me, I think if you're excited about these or the systems in general, I guess I and you have the funds, obviously, like to play Spider-Man, Demon's Souls, and then the third party offerings, I actually don't think it's that bad of a launch lineup like some people have lamented, I think. So if you have the cash and the interest, I don't think it's now is necessarily a bad time to jump in either.
Great. So final question. It's the question that we always kind of hate getting, but it's the one everybody always wants to ask anyway, which makes sense. It's like, if you are going to upgrade to a system, it's like, hey, I can only afford one. Which one should I get? How would you answer somebody? Reiner's trying to run away.
Reiner's just leaving.
Get back here, man.
Brian and I talked about this a lot because it is a really important question. I don't think a lot of people have it in their budgets to be able to get both of these things right away. And it's probably the same answer that we've given in previous generations, but even more force behind the answer, which is that you should play where your friends are going to play, and you should play where you have an existing collection and engagement. There are other distinctions between the PlayStation and the Xbox, which we've spent the last hour or so talking about. There's a distinction, you know, we talked about kind of innovation for PlayStation 5 or attempts at innovation versus, you know, sort of iteration on already good concepts with the Xbox. But really, when it comes down to it, if you play a lot of Call of Duty and all of your friends are planning to get Xbox, you should probably get an Xbox. Right. I mean, if all your friends play Destiny 2 on PlayStation, that's probably the place you should go. I mean, if you think about what's bringing you joy in your gaming free time right now, isn't that the answer? It's like where you are able to have fun with your buddies, because both of the systems are really good. I mean, they're both very fast. They're both incredibly powerful, you know, effectively powerful gaming rigs.
Yeah, I would also just look at the games, right? Not just day one, but what's coming down the road. You know, figure out when you if you're going to adapt to both of them, you know, which one you want first, given the roadmap of games coming out. But, you know, I'm going to phrase it a little differently. Like, if you're looking for a machine that delivers something different and feels truly next gen, I think Sony does. Like, that controller is, like I said, it's a difference maker, and I'm really impressed with it. And I've loved the Xbox controller forever, and now I'm like, they got to do something to compete with Sony on this because it's really neat. So in that capacity of just a physical experience that you're having and next gen quality, I think PlayStation 5 is the way to go.
I think just to make sure we're not like completely shortchanging the Xbox, when we were talking about the innovation versus iteration, I think that a lot of what got Xbox from its rocky Xbox One launch to where it ended up, which I think is, you know, an awesome console, is through that iteration over the course of the generation. And now that they've reached a really awesome spot, I wanted to make sure that we're not just writing off iteration as like a negative connotation. I think that iteration is largely what has gotten Xbox to this point. And I think that, you know, continued iteration is only a good thing. And I think that's demonstrated very aptly in the Xbox Series X and S.
A question for you, that if someone goes to a store and there's only an S on the store shelves, should they buy that or should they wait for X if they really want the best of this gen?
So there are three things that make the S worse than the Series X. And so it's the lack of the disk drive. So, I mean, obviously that means if you're a big fan of like Ultra HD Blu-rays or you like having games in physical form, that's not going to work for you. It can't get up to 4K. It only gets up to 1440p. And it also has a smaller hard drive, which is, I think, honestly, that's the biggest thing against it for me, because I like having a lot of games on my hard drive. Even a terabyte is probably too small for me by a long shot, especially with how big games are getting.
Yeah.
The other side of that is the Xbox Series S, because it doesn't display 4K, it doesn't download 4K textures. So the game sizes are going to be a lot smaller, whereas the Series X is downloading, you know, all those 4K textures. But still, like, a 512 gigabyte SSD is not going to get you too many next-gen AAA titles.
Because the PlayStation also has two versions. I don't know if you want to break those down, Miller, real quick.
Yeah, I mean, there's less of a difference there with PlayStation 5. It's pretty much just the disk drive. You're still going to get the full hardware, you know, up to 4K, all that kind of stuff. You're just not going to be able to pop in a disk. Or watch a UHD or a Blu-ray or whatever. Also, by the way, I think Brian brings up a good point. To not shortchange Xbox, I think one of the other really important things that we kind of breezed past is we should not undersell the value of Xbox Games Pass. Microsoft has built that up. The idea that there are so many games that at launch are promised, you know, first-party stuff comes to Xbox Games Pass. That is a huge deal in terms of just how much money you're going to spend on games. If you decide to invest in Xbox, there's no similar promise from Sony with the PlayStation 5.
It's crazy that Xbox Game Pass is going to have not only like the first party, like the Halos, the Fables, the Gears. It's also going to have all those studios that Microsoft has acquired over the last several years, including all the Bethesda titles.
Obsidian, you know,
Yeah, like Obsidian totally. Games. Like, I mean, I don't own Gears 5 or Outer Worlds because they just automatically got added to my library because I have a Game Pass Ultimate subscription. And, you know, that's going to continue with any other studios that Microsoft releases games under. Like, you know, it owns something like 20 studios now. So it's like those games all come to Game Pass on day one.
Sony does not have anything similar. Well, they have things that are trying to be similar in PS Now and PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Plus monthly games and the PlayStation Plus collection. All of that stuff is there to try to kind of offer a certain level of competition to what Microsoft is doing with Xbox Games Pass. But it frankly doesn't come close to that. That said, if you're okay with spending the $60 every time a game comes out, on your PlayStation, then that's 70. Not really a concern, or 70 exactly. Then that's not a concern for you. If you want a higher confidence that like on a regular basis you're going to get an influx of new game and genuinely new games, Microsoft really has a remarkable value there that it's offering with a subscription to Games Pass.
Yeah, and it's not just the first party titles that make that a great value. Like I've discovered amazing indie titles from that. And like it's like, oh, cool, Metal Gear Solid 5 is up on Xbox now, or it was for a little bit. I don't know if it still is.
That cool little indie title.
I wasn't gonna say anything.
Well, I have a feeling we could keep talking about this for a long time because, you know, new consoles are very exciting. Like this is honestly just the beginning of the whole console generation. So we definitely will continue to keep talking about them week after week. So keep coming back. We'll continue to share our thoughts. The reviews for both systems are online now. So you should go to GameInformer.com and check those out. We have video versions as well, which are very well made. Congrats, Alex. And yeah, thanks for watching or listening to this episode of the show. We'll be back next week with more Game Informer show. So please like and subscribe and stay tuned until then. Game on.